Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome into episode 15 of Talking Phillies. I'm your host, Joe Giglio, and we got a really good show planned for this week. At least I think we do, and I think we have a really good guest you're going to want to hear from. Later in this episode, Phillies prospect Scott Kingery will join the show. He, of course, last week promoted to AAA. Right around the time we were recording last week's podcast, he was getting that call up. Had a really, really impressive few games for his debut. We talked to him on Friday, got a chance to catch up with him before his first weekend in AAA, but Scott was on the show, so we're going to bring that to you right in the middle of this episode. Had some interesting things to say about his call-up, about his year, approach, how he's changed it a little bit, and just how he's done this to go from a guy that was a couple years ago in the lower levels to knocking on the door now to eventually make it to the big leagues and play for the Philadelphia Phillies. So Scott Kingery will be with us. We have a mailbag later on this show. I want to get to some first half superlatives, or I guess the opposite of superlatives, because the way the Phillies have played for this season as the team reaches the midway point of their season around July 4th. And I want to start here with a couple things. I want to start number one, and really the theme of our show this week is, what can the Phillies learn from the Sixers process? The Sixers are the talk of the town now in Philadelphia, and the Phillies have undergone, you know, a similar type of rebuild where it was bottom out and try to start from ground zero. Baseball and basketball are different, but that's where I want to start because of how excited the city is right now for the Sixers and how the Phillies could maybe one day achieve the same type of thing. Remember to subscribe on iTunes and of course CBSPhilly.com for all these episodes. Hashtag Talking Phillies on Twitter. All right, we'll start with the Sixers process compared to the Phillies, and then get to a couple outside-the-box trade ideas as we roll through July, and it is, you know, it's trade deadline season. On the Phillies and this process and the one they're in right now, I think they should try to learn from what the Sixers did. And I think a lot of what the Sixers did is applicable. Obviously, things are different in baseball and basketball with drafts and CBAs and salary caps and all that. But here's what I think they can learn. I think, number one, the Phillies have to go all in on this and not change their plan because things have been difficult here in 2017. I heard Andy McPhail speak. He was in Citi Field for this weekend series. Matt Klentak was there as well. And they spoke over the weekend. And Andy McPhail sounded frustrated. He sounded like an executive that thought things would be better this year. He even said that. He thought last year, 2016, would be their really bad year, and then maybe this year would be a little better. It's been the reverse. It's been the opposite for the Phillies. But I look at what the Sixers did, and specifically Sam Hinkie, and how he did not let perception, public perception, fan perception, change the trajectory of the Sixers. And what I mean by that is the Sixers could have easily, in one of the years that took, you know, they were tanking, went out there and signed a player or two to try to move the thing forward a little bit, or significantly, but it would have ruined the process, right? It would have taken away from the point, which was to be as bad as they could be, accumulate as many assets as they could, with very little eye on the present and all the eye on the future. And I look at what the Phillies are now, and I just know it. There's going to be a clamoring when this season ends from, you know, everyone in the city. And I mean people that cover the team, and maybe not a push from them, but just, you know, the idea will be out there to the folks on WIP, myself, everyone that hosts a show, to the fans, to you guys, to, hey, go fix this team. Go add a little bit. You don't have to wait a couple years. And while that could be done smartly, it might not be the time to do it. The Phillies have to pick and choose when they are going to spend their money. And just because they have a lot of money to spend after this year doesn't mean they should spend it unwisely just to appease everyone, to appease us, right? Like if Jake Arrieta gets to the free agent market, which he's going to, and the Phillies meet with him, which I wouldn't be shocked if they did. I mean, they know Andy McPhail and Matt Klentak know him very well. And even if it's a courtesy thing, just a free agent meeting to see what he's looking for, is it the right time to sign a 32-year-old pitcher, even one that's had amazing success in recent years? I don't know. I don't think it is. So if that's the case, learn from the Sixers there. They did not try to speed their process up before it was truly ready to speed up. Now, the other thing I think they have to learn from the Sixers, and I think they already have a pretty good grasp on this, at least I think Andy McPhail does because he's been around the game so long, but this is more for Matt Klentak than anyone else. Perception does matter, and perception can become reality, and perception can destroy what's being built. And let's go back to Sam Hinkie, right? Sam Hinkie with the Sixers was doing many, many good things, but there was a perception that he was aloof. There was a perception that he was thought he was smarter than everyone. There was a perception among many fans, not the trust the process crowd, but the anti-process crowd, that he was unwilling to talk, had no timeline on what he was doing, and it became a toxic thing. Like, Sam Hinkie, in a lot of circles, became toxic, even though clearly now he's been vindicated, right? He knew what he was doing. He set this team up to be really good. Matt Klentak has to be aware of that. There is a line, a fine line between smart, there's a fine line between too smart for the room, and there's a fine line between being pragmatic compared to making people think you don't care or making people think there's never going to be an end to this. And I think Hinkie ran into all those things. And the public outcry from the sport didn't help him, but it also didn't help him. There were a lot of people in the city of Philadelphia that said, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Get him out of here. This process thing is a bunch of baloney. Now, Matt Klentak could start dealing with something like this soon, right? I mean, he's the one that threw out there the Cubs and the Astros and the Nationals. And while he's right, when you do that, people are going to eventually have some expectations. They're going to want a timeline. So he's got to be careful here. If they lose 110 games this year, you know, there could be a group of fans and a loud minority that say, get this guy out. He doesn't know what he's doing. And we got to make a change here. So they have to be aware of public perception and try to massage that as much as they can. The third thing I think the Phillies can learn from the Sixers process is to hoard flexibility. And this is something I think they're doing. I think they'll continue to do. Like, when the Phillies went into their last offseason, some of the questions were, why all these one-year contracts? Well, it hoards flexibility. The Phillies are flexible now at the trade deadline. They're flexible going into next year's free agent class. They're also flexible now because they have so little money on the books to take back salary in a trade. And a couple weeks ago, I brought up the Giancarlo Stanton idea, right? I mean, Giancarlo Stanton is making a boatload of money the next 10 years. And the Phillies are probably one of the few teams in baseball that can absorb his contract. You know, I heard some talk this week about, look, the Phillies' payroll is so low compared to where it used to be. It should be a little bit higher. If it's higher, they can't do things like I think they're going to be doing over the next couple of years, which is not only spend money, but be creative in trades because they could take back salary. Let me just throw this scenario out there, and I don't even know if this is a remote possibility now or in the future. But Mike Trout's name always comes up in trade conversation, trade ideas with the Phillies, and it's mostly conjecture. It's probably 99% conjecture and hope and all that. But let's just say in a year or two, if the Angels decide, you know, we can't compete even with them, right? And we're never going to be a championship team right now the way we're structured. The farm system's so bad, even with them. Maybe we'll open up the phone lines to have someone call us on a deal. Not necessarily trading away Mike Trout, but finally listening, okay? If that day arrives, I could imagine one of the stipulations or one of the ways the Phillies could move a conversation forward with the Angels would be to say, hey, how many teams in baseball could actually take back and take Albert Pujols off of your hands? And Albert Pujols is an all-time great, had a 600th home run a couple weeks ago, going to go to the Hall of Fame. But his contract the next few years will be an albatross as he gets worse and worse, and he can't play the field. And if he's playing first base, it's going to be a disaster. Like, the Phillies, because they only have $5 million on the books for 2019, literally could take back Albert Pujols and release him or buy him out. Not many teams in baseball could even entertain that. I'd imagine the number's less than five, if that, because it's such a gigantic deal and most teams just don't have that kind of flexibility to literally do that. It reminds me of the Sixers and what they did in their trade a couple years ago with the Kings, taking back salary in exchange for draft picks and pick swap, and that's basically what's led them to be what they are right now, and directly led to landing Markelle Fultz in this past draft at number one overall. So maintain that flexibility. It was so crucial for the Sixers. It could be crucial here for the Phillies. The fourth thing I think they have to learn or can learn from the Sixers is to continue to take chances. And I think the Phillies are on this path. You know, I look at what Robert Covington has been for the Sixers, a second-round pick they gave a chance to. T.J. McConnell, a guy they gave a chance to undrafted. So, actually, Covington was an undrafted player as well. So, you go to these type of guys, and the Phillies have to keep doing this, churning the roster over. Daniel Nava has been that. I don't think Daniel Nava is going to stick around, but maybe you get something for the trade deadline. They struck out a lot with some of these one-year deals, but keep doing that. I would think next offseason, as much as you might say, oh, here we go again, I think another slew of one-year deals could work. You know, I think Nishek has been an example of that, where you might get something back for him at the trade deadline. And I'll also flip this around at the deadline. If there is a depreciated asset, that's a Sixers term, if there's a depreciated asset, right, if there's a player that maybe signed a long-term deal a few years ago, isn't playing as well, or a team is maybe looking to sell a player that doesn't have the same kind of value he once did, whether it's injury or whatever it is, take a chance on that guy. Try to find your Jake Arrieta in a trade. That's, I think, where the Phillies should be living over the next couple weeks in these trade discussions. Find the former top prospect that for whatever reason has flamed out or failed or is back in the minors or, you know, goes up and down, and see if you can get that guy in a deal for a Nishek or a Howie Kendrick or, you know, whoever it might be you're going to sell away. That is called taking a chance, and sometimes those pay off more than anything else you're going to do. They pay off more than just landing the top prospect of today. And the fifth thing the Phillies can learn from the Sixers rebuild is really just how crucial player development is. I think we're seeing that a little bit now with a guy like Nick Pivetta, who they got a couple years ago in that deal with Jonathan Papelbon. The Phillies have been criticized a lot, and I've done it, for developing their players in the minor leagues. They get to the big leagues, they don't perform as well. The continued development in the major league level is going to set them apart here, and how quickly they may become something good over the next couple years. Like, we know they're going to spend eventually. We know they have some really good players knocking on the door to the big leagues. Now you got to develop them further. Like, Nick Williams made his debut this weekend. I was impressed with what he did up in New York. I went to a pair of the games. I was at the game on Friday night, his major league debut. I was at the game on Sunday up at Citi Field. And you could see some ability there. I thought he had good instinct on the base paths. He's big, athletic kid. Went the other way with a pitch. Hit a couple balls hard that became outs. I was impressed with his first weekend. Now continue to develop what they already did develop at the minor leagues, but it's got to go to one more level if, you know, Nick Williams is going to become something good for them and become a real player for them at the big league level. So, you know, I think you go to some of these things the Sixers did, and it's funny because the Sixers were lambasted for years in Philadelphia for this process, and the thing about it is it worked, and the Sixers now are set up to be a consistently good team for a long time, which I think is all you can ask, right? Like, if you go through a process, if you go through a rebuild, that's all you can ask for as a fan base. And now the hope is the Phillies, going through their own type of process, can find their way into that. So although basketball and baseball are different, and although the tanking in basketball is much more fruitful because the top of the draft does yield the best players, and baseball is much more sporadic where, you know, there's no guarantee. I don't even remember the name right now off the top of my head. The kid that went number one overall, a shortstop, to the Twins this past year in the draft a couple weeks ago, right? There's no guarantee at all he will be a better player, or even a markedly better player, than Adam Haseley, who went number eight overall to the Phillies. But that being said, you'd rather have the top pick than the eighth pick. But in basketball, it's the gap over the years is just historically different. I mean, the gap between one and eight is gigantic. So the Sixers process is not a perfect parallel, but I do think now that they're having their success and they are the talk of the town in summer, in July, it should be number one eye-opening to the Phillies, because theoretically this should be baseball talk season, right? If things were going better, if things were going the way the Phillies wish or the way you wish they were for the Phillies, July would be about which star the Phillies are going to go after to make a push to October. July would dominate the airwaves, dominate your web traffic in Philadelphia, dominate the back pages to go old school on you. That would be the talk of the town. You know, up in New York, where the Phillies were this past weekend, you pop on Sports Talk Radio, and it's 24-7 Mets and Yankees. 24-7. That's all it is. You know, a little bit maybe on Phil Jackson with the Knicks, because the Knicks became a disaster and he got fired, but that's for a couple days. There's no football talk. There's very little basketball talk. There will be no buzz for the summer league. Basketball in Philadelphia dominates talk right now. By the end of the month, the Eagles and football will. The Phillies, hopefully, for their sake, and I'm sure they feel this, will want to get that back in a couple years and be the talk of the town, or at least one of the conversations in town, the biggest one, in July. And if they follow the Sixers' path and process and thought process during the process, I think they'll find their way there sooner than later. All right, a couple things I want to touch on here as far as the trade market, and then we'll get to our conversation with Iron Pig second baseman Scott Kingery. So I have a couple of outside-the-box trade thoughts for the Phillies that they should really consider over the next, you know, 3 weeks leading to that July 31st trade deadline. And the first one is a veteran I've thought more about that they should really place a phone call to acquire, because I think he could change the face of the Phillies for now and give them their veteran presence that's still very productive. And then one is a trade away I think the Phillies can make, how they could sell and package a couple players to take advantage of a contender in need. The first one, let's start with the guy that they should inquire about. And that would be Andrew McCutchen. His name has come up before in this podcast. I've written about him. The Pirates are in a very strange spot where he's been the face of their franchise for a while. He's a former National League MVP. By the way people talked about him the last year or so, you'd think he's 35 and he's done. He's not. He's not that old. And he still has some life in him. And you look at his numbers really since the end of, let's say, last August. He's hit well. And he had some knee issues in the past. I think he's much better suited now to be a corner outfielder. And I know the Phillies have a lot of outfield prospects, have drafted outfielders the past 3 years, really. Especially the last two, and with athletic ones in, you know, Adam Haseley this year, Mickey Moniak the year before. You say, well, I don't think they need McCutchen, and he's, you know, he's past his prime. There is something, though, to changing the conversation and changing the tenor of a clubhouse and changing the face of a team. And I think back to what the Nationals did, and we'll get to them in a second, you know, a few years ago, or more than that now, when they signed Jason Worth. Remember that? And they took a chance. Before they were really ready to win, they gave Jason Worth a whole bunch of money. I think Andrew McCutchen could be the Phillies' version of Jason Worth if they traded for him. And I think the Pirates will sell. And I think McCutchen is very available if the right offer is made to him. Now, would I give up the best prospects in the system to go get him? Absolutely not. But would I go trade for him if he's available and it is not going to break the, you know, farm system? Yeah, I would. I would take a chance to bring him to Philadelphia and see if he can revive himself. And he's hit well the last couple months in a new city. Fresh start for Andrew McCutchen. Now, the trade I think the Phillies should explore in taking advantage of a contender, and I think they should make a phone call, is to the Washington Nationals. Now, you never want to trade and help out a division rival, and who wants to gift the Nationals the NL East and help them win a World Series? But I do think at some point you have to think broader than that, and I think the Phillies are at that point right now. We know the Nationals need bullpen help. We know Pat Neshek makes sense there. The Phillies have a standing offer for him. The Nationals seem like the team that, you know, they need multiple relievers. I think Neshek could be one of two guys they get to fix their bullpen. But the other thing that happened this past week that I think could spur a bigger conversation between the Nationals and the Phillies is the injury to Trey Turner, their shortstop, their all-star shortstop. Trey Turner is a tremendous player, was leading the National League in steals. He's a really fun player, really good young player. He's going to be out a while at a broken wrist. And I don't think it's going to ruin his season. He'll probably be back, but they're going to miss him for a while. And they've scuffled lately. The Mets have played better lately. It's not crazy to think the Nationals are saying to themselves, you know, we're going to have to, you know, at least play representatively here. We can't cruise to a division title. I would offer the Nationals both Pat Neshek and Freddie Galvis. And Freddie, he's won me over with his leadership lately, and I give him a lot of credit for that. But, you know, we know he's not the long-term shortstop of the Phillies. That's still going to be J.P. Crawford. So I would offer them both Neshek and Galvis. Galvis remains a stopgap for them. They could even play Galvis in the postseason if they wanted to and move Turner back to the outfield in a deal to hopefully get a legitimate prospect back from the Nationals. I think that would be a creative way for Matt Klentak and Eddie McPhail to think outside the box, package two of these mediocre trade, you know, sale candidates, and get something solid back in return. So call the Pirates for McCutchen, see what they're asking for, and I would absolutely package Neshek and Freddie Galvis to the Washington Nationals. See if you can take advantage of some desperation for a team that is not with this group. Won a postseason series, but they're certainly this year with that pitching and Bryce Harper good enough to do it as long as they get to October in one piece. All right, we'll come back. Scott Kingery, the second baseman now for the Iron Pigs, and I think sooner than later, the second baseman for the Philadelphia Phillies. He will join us coming up next on Talkin' Phillies.
Scott Kingery, now second baseman for the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Of course, one of the prospects we've been talking so much about this year for the Phillies, joining us now on Talkin' Phillies. Scott, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. I mean, it's got to be a whirlwind for you, right? I mean, we're recording this on a Friday. It feels like it's got to be a crazy week for you, moving up and getting to Lehigh Valley. Do you have your bearings yet, or are you still kind of getting yourself settled in up there?
Yeah, I mean, it's been crazy. It's gone by pretty quick this first couple of days. And, you know, for me, I'm just trying to get comfortable, get my feet under me a little bit here, and just trying to keep things rolling and get ready for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and look, so far so good with the numbers you put up and the home runs and the defense you played. I mean, I think fans have a perception, Scott, of moving up a level and what that means and the transition. You've made it seem easy. Is it a big transition? Did you feel like it, or is baseball just baseball when you're playing the game?
It's definitely, you know, a big transition. And for me, I was, you know, I ended in Double-A, you know, on a hot streak, and I was feeling real comfortable with the plate. So I think that helped me when I got up here, that I was feeling super comfortable with the plate, even though, you know, in my first game here, obviously, you know, it was some nerves, a little bit nervous coming in here, first time in Triple-A. Obviously, there was some, you know, I was a little bit antsy in the box, but I've been feeling really good to play, really relaxed, and it's showing. And as for defense and all that other stuff, you know, I know how to play the game one way, and every time on the field, you know, I'm going to give it my all, and that shows. And for me to just come out here and have all this stuff, good stuff happen to me the first couple of days here, you know, I'm setting the bar pretty high for myself right now. It's going to be tough to follow up.
Well, you've done that, and there's no doubt. And look, Scott, Phillies fans are really excited about you and how quickly you're moving through this system and playing well. Now, you're from Arizona and from out west. Did you have any thoughts or perceptions of Philadelphia fans before you became part of the Phillies organization? And what's been your thoughts so far? I mean, I'm sure they interact with you on social media and probably tweet at you all the time how excited they are. What did you think of Philadelphia fans before you became part of this organization?
Honestly, I mean, yeah, being from Arizona, I didn't really, you know, pay much attention to, you know, any East Coast teams really at all. So I didn't really have a big idea of what, you know, Philadelphia fans were like. So, you know, now since I've been in the organization for a little bit, I can tell that they're really passionate fans. And, you know, yeah, I have some people that, you know, come out to the games and they're really passionate about the minor league teams and the major league teams. And, you know, it's awesome. It's, you know, they really love their sports, and, you know, that's something that I like, because it's nice to interact with fans that are passionate about the game.
Yeah, and look, if you're good and you're a good player in Philadelphia, you'll be beloved for a long time. But that's, hopefully for you, that's to come here. Now, I got to ask you about your power and the home runs you've been hitting this year, because it's startling. I mean, when you look back and, you know, as someone who's followed your career since you got drafted here, you weren't thought about as a power hitter. You weren't talked about as one. Your numbers didn't bear that out the first couple years in the organization. Now, as we do have this conversation, and who knows, by the time our listeners get this, you might have a few more home runs. We have 21 home runs now on the season combined between the two levels. Where is this coming from? Is it the weight you put on in the offseason? Have you changed your swing? Is it just happening? Why so much power now?
You know, I'm pretty surprised about it, too. It's taken me a little bit to wrap my head around it too. But for me, I think it is just a combination of the time that I did put in the weight room during the off season, and as well as a few minor tweaks in my swing that I changed during the off season. And, you know, I didn't think it would be this. I don't think this would happen, but, you know, I'm not complaining about it at all. I credit it to a couple of things, and, you know, if I can keep this going, that's something. I thought the power was always there with me. I just think a few things that I changed helped me unlock that power and get that carry on the ball that I needed to sneak them out instead of them being doubles.
What did you change? And does it have anything to do with launch angle or the way you're swinging the bat? I mean, we hear about that a lot now, especially in the big leagues. A lot of good hitters that purposely try to drive the ball in the air. And it's kind of, you know, I played baseball growing up, not at your level, but I played, and it was the coaches always like, you know, hit down on the ball, try to drive the ball down and create the backspin that way. And now it feels like a lot of players, the big league guys, are talking about the opposite, you know, hit the ball in the air, because generally good things happen and you can hit a lot of home runs. We're seeing a lot more home runs in the big league. Are you trying to hit fly balls? Has any coach worked with you on that? Or is it for you still the same approach in terms of how to drive the baseball you've always had?
For me, it's been the same approach. You know, I've always been a line drive hitter, and you know, and when people say, you know, they're swinging up in the air, that's not me. I try to get line drive, so it's not technically, you know, in a fly ball or anything. For me, I'm just trying to hit a hard line drive somewhere and spray the gaps. But the things I changed in my swing a little bit just helped me stay on my back leg a little bit longer, being able to see pitches a little bit longer so I could improve my approach at the plate. And that's really helped me allow myself to see pitches longer and get the pitch that I know I can hit well, and then I know it can drive. So since I've been able to do that, I've been getting my pitch that I know I can hit more often, and I think that, you know, that's why I have some increase in power this year.
Do you pay attention, or did you over the last couple of years, to the big league team and think at all about your future and when you could come up here? Or is that something that you try to block out and just play? I mean, it's impossible for fans to do it. I think they look at the Phillies right now and they want to see you and a lot of your teammates from AAA make their way to this big league team quickly. And we know Nick Williams made his debut over the weekend here. So yeah, he's up, and I'm sure more of you guys will come up sooner than later. But do you think about that in the big league team, or do you just try to stay focused on the day-to-day?
Yeah, that's something that I've never really, you know, done is think too far ahead. I've always been a guy that kind of takes it day by day. And, you know, I'm at the level I'm at, and I'm going to do everything I can to improve my game at the level I'm at, so that if the Phillies do think I'm ready, I give them a reason to believe that I can take the next step and take the next challenge. So for me, you know, you hear stuff, but for me, I try to block it out and just focus on what I can do every day at the level I'm at.
Do you, when you were growing up, was there a player you watched that you try to model yourself after or looked at? I mean, the comparison that we hear a lot about you when people watch you, and I think I heard this from the moment you were drafted, and maybe it's because of your size compared to him or the West Coast thing, but Dustin Pedroia's name comes up as a comparison for you. Do you have a guy you modeled yourself after or liked watching when you were growing up?
I mean, for me, I did get a chance to watch Dustin Pedroia play, you know, when he was at ASU, because I was, you know, obviously from Arizona. I grew up 10 minutes from, you know, when he – from Arizona State. So when he was playing there, I got a few chances to see him. And obviously, you know, I really liked the way he played the game. I don't know if I necessarily modeled myself, you know, in my game after him, but he was definitely someone you could watch and learn stuff about the game from. So, you know, just having the chance to be able to watch him and, you know, in college and then going up and what he's done, been able to do in the major leagues, it's definitely a guy you can take a few things from and use in your game.
So you're at AAA right now, and like we were talking about earlier, there's, you know, a group of you guys that I think fans think are going to be up in Philadelphia sooner than later and maybe help turn this thing around and the Phillies become a winning team again. What's your perception of the players you're playing with and the talent? I mean, there's an excitement level among the fan base that, you know, there's a group of you guys that could form a good bit of the next nucleus of a winning team. Do you see that too? Can you feel a lot of talent on that team alongside of you at AAA?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Every time you look at this lineup, I mean, day in and day out, and even the lineup, when I went to join AA at the end of last season, when they had the lineup there, it's, you know, there's guys up and down that lineup that are impact players and can, you know, do some incredible stuff on a baseball field. So, you know, there's reason to be excited and with the talent level that we have and the young guys that we have. I mean, you know, guys like Roman Quinn, who's been in the big leagues already, who, you know, quick, explosive, and can impact the game super fast on the bases. And then you got, you know, the big hitters like Nick Williams and Alfaro and Hoskins and Cousins. Then you got a bunch of arms. You can just tell there's a lot of stuff to be excited about with the guys on this team. It's obviously a fun group to watch play day in and day out and be able to play alongside.
How about your manager, Dusty Wathan? I got a chance to go to Reading last year, and I watched one of your games. I'm not sure if you were there or not at that point. I think you were. I think you were in the lineup that day. But I talked to Dusty, and I was impressed by him. And you got a chance to be with him a little bit last year. Now obviously you're with him again this year. What kind of manager is he? Because I think a lot of fans are looking at him and saying, you know, he deserves some credit here for how all of you guys are developing.
Yeah, I mean, he's an awesome guy. I mean, I think he really knows how to, get the most out of his players. And, you know, he knows what they need to do and what they need to do to improve on to take that next step. And, I mean, even at AA last year, he knew what guys, you know, needed to do to be able to make that jump to AAA the next year. But, I mean, he's just, you know, he's helpful. He's got answers for everything. So, it's awesome to be able to play alongside him and under him last year and now again this year. So it should be a fun rest of the season.
It should. We'll be paying attention. And, Scott, I'm not sure how much you pay attention to the rest of the pro teams in Philadelphia, but there's kind of a big youth movement going on right now with Carson Wentz at quarterback, Joel Embiid, all these first-round picks for the Sixers. Hopefully you guys with the Phils coming up soon. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think, in a few years when all you guys are up here. So good luck, and hopefully we'll see you in Philadelphia soon, all right?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You got it. Thank you.
Thanks again to Scott for joining us on this episode of Talking Phillies. And you can tell he's a confident kid. You can tell he's a kid that is kind of taking it all in right now and trying not to look too far ahead. But the excitement level for him is there. He's become that prospect that everyone is talking about in Philadelphia. And look, I think if he continues to hit and play at all facets of the game, the way he did in his first week at AAA and certainly the way he did at AA at Reading this year, despite the 40-man thing and then the fact that the Phillies could, you know, it would behoove them to maybe wait till next year to call him up. I think he could force their hand at some point this summer, and I hope he does it. And obviously rooting for him to make it all the way to the big leagues this year. All right. A couple things I want to do here in this segment, in our final segment of Talking Phillies this week. You know, sometimes you read someone who covers a team or you're doing a podcast, or, you know, however you're covering the team and talking about the team. And a lot of times people around baseball wait till the All-Star break to do first half awards, superlatives. I don't like to do that because I think if it lines up, and it does for our weekly podcast, the Phillies are about at their first, you know, they're going to meet at the midway point of the season, as every team is, before they reach the All-Star break. That's more of like the 90-game mark or close to that. So I think the true bearer of the first half awards should be now, and we're going to do it right now. And then I'll get to a couple of really good mailbag questions about this team and about their future. Let's start with the superlatives. And we'll do some good, some bad, and some I guess, in the middle for this Phillies team. Let's start with the MVP of the team. And there aren't many guys to choose from here, but I think this is deserving for Aaron Altherr. Aaron Altherr really came out of nowhere, and it's funny because the ebbs and flows of his hot streak when it was in May, the losing that occurred afterwards, it's almost like he was the talk of town for a couple weeks, and then we kind of got off it. He's not having a blistering OPS over 1,000 MVP season, but he's certainly an MVP this team, and he's certainly producing at a very nice level, and has played to the point where you have to start considering him in this mix for the future of this baseball team. And he's putting up a good year. It's not just a good year by Philly standards. Aaron Altherr has been a really good player, plays good defense, runs the bases, hits, has really not had a really bad streak. He's had a couple of really good streaks, but he's been their best player from pillar to post, especially when you have the injury to Cesar Hernandez. He became the most valuable Philly by leaps and bounds. The anti-MVP has been Michael Franco, and there's just no other way to say it. And to play every day, and to produce as little as he has, and to make as many outs as he has, it's dragged the lineup down. And every time he has a big hit or a home run, you think this is it, right? I know I do. You think he's going to break out, and you think that he is going to, you know, start dominating and start being the guy he was 2 years ago. And then every time he does that, it's another 0 for 6 with 3 strikeouts, and you're kind of brought right back down to earth. He's been the anti-MVP this year. The Cy Young for the Phillies this year, again, it's slim pickings, but it's been Aaron Nola, and the consistency he has displayed as we do this podcast leading into his next start. So if he gets bombed by the Pirates, don't blame me. But the consistency he started to display and the strikeout numbers he's starting to put up and the innings he's starting to show, the good thing about his first half, the best thing, is that his arm has remained healthy. I mean, he had that little injury in April, took him out for about a month with the back, but I'm not worried about that. His arm has stayed healthy. That has been very encouraging. The stuff has been plus at times. He's given you reasons to believe he's going to be that pitcher that you thought he was going to be a couple of years ago. The anti-Cy Young was Vince Velasquez before he got hurt. Now he's on the mend back, had a rehab start with the Iron Pigs. He could come back maybe right around the second half start. But let's not sugarcoat it. As much as I've defended Vince Velasquez, I still believe in his potential. 5.58 ERA and a DL stint. That's an anti-Cy Young for the first half of the year. The best move the Phillies have made in this first half, designated Michael Saunders for assignment. I mean, it was a long time coming. We talked about how it had to happen. I couldn't believe how long it took to happen. But it finally did. And I give the Phillies credit for finally doing it because, you know, as much as we say, look, this payroll is not high, swallow the $9 million, get out of this contract, get this guy off the team, and bring up some real players and guys that actually have a future with this team, they did it before the end of the first half, which, as much as I kept saying in late May, early June, hey, guys, it's time to DFA Michael Saunders. As much as I kept saying that, I didn't know when they were going to do it. And I think a lot of teams probably would have waited till July, to the All-Star break, to trade deadline. And I would have been shocked if they didn't do it all year. But I think it was, finally, you got a sense that they cared about moving this thing forward and cared about bringing some guys up. And getting Saunders off the team. So I give them a lot. I give them some credit for that one. And making sure that Michael Saunders went off this baseball team. And it's the best move of the first half by far from the front office. The worst move, and I think this one will probably be depending on your point of view, but the worst move, at least it looks like as of now, was extending Pete McGannon's contract when they did. And does it severely change the trajectory of this team? No. And I've said it from the jump. That contract extension was very, very little to actually, talk about in terms of him being the guy moving forward. I don't think it really changed the trajectory of Pete McCannon's tenure here. If they want to move on, they can move on. But the optics of it are bad. But I'll give you the other side of it, right? And I said this depends on which side of this you're on. It probably, if the Phillies were making their own checklist, if Andy McPhail and Matt Klentak actually made a checklist of what we did right, what we did wrong in the first half, they probably put Pete McCannon's contract in a what we did right. Because forget results for a second. Here's what it did. It shut the conversation down before we really could have it. Right? The Phillies, are on pace for well over 100 losses this season. In every other instance I can ever remember of a team being on pace for over 100 losses, the conversation in midseason, if it hasn't happened already, is about the manager getting fired. Well, when the front office extends the manager's contract and holds a press conference about how they believe in Pete McCannon, before the team went off the rails, it kind of ends the conversation before it starts. Now, if the Phillies have an awful July and an awful August, I'm sure it'll be a talking point again in September. But until then, they kind of closed the conversation on us before we could really, really have it. And I think that is an interesting subplot and an interesting move. I mean, I call it a bad move because I'm not the biggest Pete McCannon fan, and it is a strange atmosphere when the manager gets extended and then the team loses a bunch of games and gets worse, but the front office may look at it as a good move for them. We'll end with, in this little section of our episode, the biggest under-the-radar subplot of the first half. And I found this interesting when it hit me and when when I saw it, or the nugget, whatever you want to call it, it's not really a statistic. But when the Phillies called up Nick Williams, I think this is an underrated subplot, and it goes against, kind of the perception isn't reality thing. I think we did a podcast on that. We did an episode on perception and reality. The perception of the Phillies is, and I get this all the time, every single time we're interacting on Twitter, hashtag Talking Phillies, it's always where you can find the podcast and reach out to me with questions, @JoeGilioSports, or just comments on anything. And I appreciate all the feedback. But anytime I mention the kids, whether it be Scott Kindgren, I mentioned, I tweeted out that Scott was going to join us in this episode, or I tweeted about Nick Williams impressing me, there's always one of two responses. If we're talking about someone that's in the minor leagues currently, the response is, when's he coming up? 3 years from now? And the other side is, like I mentioned, Nick Williams, and I got a tweet back. He's probably going back down anyway after his solid first weekend. There is a just a feeling among the Phillies fan base that the team is way too slow to bring up these kids. And what's the point? This season's over anyway. And I agree to a large extent that they could do something different. But as at every turn we've discussed, there are, you know, a couple guys have been blocked. Now, Scott Kingery is not blocked right now. He was blocked by Cesar Hernandez. Cesar is obviously in the DL. Rhys Hoskins is blocked, no doubt, by Tommy Joseph, who's been one of the more productive hitters in the National League for, you know, about 2 months now. So that impacts it. There's a perception because of the past, because they it took them long to bring up a Ryan Howard, a Chase Utley, whatever it is. That perception exists. But here's the little nugget. When Nick Williams debuted, that was the ninth player for the Phillies this season to make their big league debut. That's a lot. And when you think about it, there's probably a handful of more to come off of that. And whether those are September call-ups or earlier, we'll see. But I would not be surprised if you, let's talk about Rhys Hoskins, Dylan Cousins, Tom Eshelman at AAA may work his way here, maybe a reliever or two, maybe Kingery. You could foresee a scenario where by the end of the season, the Phillies have 14 or 15 players make their big league debuts. That's a big number. And these kids are starting to work their way here. They may not be working their way here as quickly as you want them to. And I think if you were in charge, they'd all be here. Like the whole Iron Pigs team would be here. I get that. But I also think that that little nugget is worth it. You know, talking about nine guys, that's a lot. I'd venture to say no team in baseball's had more. Maybe the Padres, right? Because they have like the whole team is rookies. They have like three Rule 5 picks making the team because they are in, you know, they don't care about this season but in the slightest. They're in a long rebuild over there, similar to the Phillies. Maybe the Padres. I'll double check. But nobody other than that has had nine guys make their big league debut. And, some teams have their rookies come up and down and help, but not like this. Like, they're coming up and playing some roles here. Pivetta, Ben Lively, and now Nick Williams. So I think that's a good sign. I think it's a sign the Phillies are going to graduate these guys when they feel they're ready. And if this season ends and, you know, the number I threw out, 14 or 15, is close to being real, I think you'll feel better. I think you'll feel like, hey, what was 2017 about? Well, it was about the kids. Well, 14 or 15 kids made their big league debut, and you start finding out what you have in them, and then you're moving forward next year. I could compare what they're doing right now. It's almost like we're watching a full year spring training. And you can say that for the organization as a whole, but also the big league team. You want to see what you have. You want to see who impresses you, get a feel for it, and then you move forward and you have a better idea. So Nick Williams, the ninth big leaguer this year to make his big ninth kid to make his big league debut for the Phillies. A significant number, I think, we should pay attention to a little bit even more, and maybe not just throw out the blanket. They never call these guys up. Well, they've caught nine of them, and there's probably a handful of more or more than that to come. All right, let's get to the mailbag. Jack chimed in with one that I wanted. I think if this wasn't a mailbag question, I might have done a whole segment on it in our first portion of this podcast. What should the Phillies do with Tommy Joseph? I think it is a fascinating question because I think it is a good problem to have, but let's not forget the second half of that. It's a problem to have, and one that has to be solved the right way by Matt Klentak and Andy McPhail. Now, Tommy Joseph, if you think about it now, came up last May, right? May 2016, right around, late May, mid-May 2016, for Ryan Howard was struggling, and eventually he took over the bulk of the at-bats. If you take away April 2017, Tommy Joseph's been a really productive Major League first baseman. Really productive. Like, we're talking about a guy that's about a 30 home run guy at first base. And while that is nothing, while we're not talking about 50 home runs, while we're not talking about a great all-around player, there's something productive happening there with Tommy Joseph. Crushed that ball for the home run on Saturday at Citi Field. Hits the ball hard when he makes contact. Has a plan at the plate. He's not perfect. He gets overpowered by some righties. We know his deficiencies defensively. We know he's not a great player, but he's a good one. Like right now, I can call Tommy Joseph a good, above average, Major League Baseball first baseman with legitimate power. Power that, as he gets into his prime, you can see in the right park, which Citizens Bank Park is, a 35 home run hitter. He reminds me, the guy that I see when I watch Tommy Joseph is Mark Trumbo, who is with the Orioles now, and I think he led the American League in home runs last year, at 47 about home runs last year. That kind of ceiling for Tommy Joseph. Now, Mark bounced around, was an Angel, moved to the Diamondbacks, then the Orioles. His value had been low in the past because of his defense, because he didn't walk enough, because of maybe he's really a DH that was masquerading around in the outfield a little bit where they don't put Joseph, but at first base, that's what I see of him. But a lot of teams would take Mark Trumbo on their team, right? Like, he had 40-something home runs last year. Tommy's got that kind of ceiling. That's what I see when I see him. The Phillies also have Rhys Hoskins, who is going to the Futures game. Matt Klentak talked about over the weekend. The Phillies obviously believe in him. He's hit at every level. That's the most amazing thing about Rhys Hoskins. He's hit at every single level he's played at. It feels like he goes to a level, he gets it down, and he does his thing. 900 OPS. The walk to strikeout ratio is my favorite part about him at AAA right now. Basically even, which is so, so rare these days. There are very few hitters that can do that. And if he can do something close to translating that to the big leagues, he'll be very productive. Very productive. Who has the higher ceiling? Tommy Joseph is only about a year older than Rhys Hoskins. It's not like Rhys is, you know, 20, 21. If he was, he'd be talked about in the top 10 prospects of baseball the way he hits. He's not. It's why when you look at those prospect lists, he's down further. He doesn't seem to have a higher ceiling than he's doing right now. But if he's this in the big leagues or he's an approximation of it, he'll be better than Tommy Joseph. This is the rub. The Phillies have to move one of these guys. And if they move Joseph, who do they move him to? What do they try to get back? And when do you do it, to go off of Jack's question? Who do you move to? Well, you go to the teams that might need first baseman. You go to the Yankees. You go to the long-term, I think the Indians might need to replace a Carlos Santana. You go to the Mariners, the Astros. These are the teams I think could be interested in a Tommy Joseph. Primarily American League teams. If the Orioles hadn't re-signed Mark Trumbo to a three-year deal, I think they would have jumped all over him. He's a Dan Duquette type of hitter. So those are the type of teams. And then as far as what you get back, I don't know what his market is. I don't know what teams like those teams look at him as. Do they value his power a lot and they say, hey, come on, let's go. We'll give you a top-shelf pitching prospect. I don't know. If you can get a real return for him and a high-end starting pitching return, I'm not talking about a big leaguer, but a guy in the minor leagues that has some real potential, I would move him and promote Rhys Hoskins. I would, despite what Tommy's shown, bet on Rhys coming up here and becoming a really good player, and I would try to trade Tommy Joseph at his peak value, which, you know what, might be right now. If he rakes for the next 2 weeks, and we're looking at 2.5 months of production, I think they could sell everything but April 2017 as, hey, this is a legitimate 35 home run guy in the big leagues at first base, and he's not, you know, he's pre-arbitration eligible, he's not close to free agency. I think that would be that'd be the move I make. So to answer your question, Jack, I'd trade him, and I'd trade him right now, or at least at the deadline. I promote Rhys Hoskins, and I would try to cash in Joseph when he's at his peak, which just crazily might be now. I never thought I'd say that back in April. All right. Now, we had another question on Twitter, which I thought was a hashtag Talkin' Phillies question, which I thought was a really interesting one, considering, you know, what they have and the fact that all these conversations happened. The question was, and this was the way the tweet was, been racking my brain over this. How do you see the Phillies' future lineup projecting using all players available, including prospects? Now, a couple weeks ago, I think I did something like this, but it wasn't including just the prospects. It was including trades and free agency. It was a way, outside the box, outlandish, speculative look. Let's keep this one to just the guys that are currently Philadelphia Phillies. And, you know, we'll set the future as to be determined. You decide when this is, a couple years from now, sometime in the near future. We'll kind of have a little narrative that way. Sometime in the near future, this will be the Philadelphia Phillies starters. This is the way I'll go around the horn, and then I'll give you a rotation, okay? Catcher, Jorge Alfaro. I still believe he's the guy. He's had a weird year at AAA where it was hot to start. It still doesn't walk. power's there. I still think he's got high upside. He'll be the catcher. At first base, Rhys Hoskins. Second base, Scott Kingery. Shortstop, still believing and still buying in to J.P. Crawford. Third base is really, really hard because I don't think it's going to be Michael Franco, and I think they would trade him away. But I don't know who the next guy is there. I don't think they have an option. That's the one spot where they're going to have to go outside the organization, barring a position switch with a guy like Kingery. But I think they're going to have to go outside the organization for third base. For this, for the moment being, their best option is going to remain a pre-free agency, Michael Franco. In the outfield, now this is a tough one, right? Because the Phillies have a lot of outfielders now to choose from. How are they going to decide who are their three guys? It's going to be tough to pare down three. I will give a leg up to the top picks, and I will say their future outfield is going to be, in some classification from left to right, Adam Haseley, the number one pick from this past couple weeks ago, June, number eight overall pick, Mickey Moniak, and Dylan Cousins. I am still bullish on Cousins. I know he's going to strike out a bunch, but I still, that power is tantalizing, and I think that he will find his way and be a big leaguer at some point, maybe as soon as this year. But that means no Roman Quinn. It means no Aaron Altair. It means no Cornelius Randolph. It means a lot of guys that are, you know, running around. It means no Oduber Herrera. So they're going to have some trade chips. They're going to have some options in the outfield. But I think I could see that outfield line, and it's very athletic. I mean, both Haseley and Moniak, they're grooming as center fielders. And if you paid attention recently to Dylan Cousins, he's not just a burly power hitter. He can hit for some play some center field, too. He's athletic. On the mound, I'm going to put Nolan in the rotation. I'm going to put Sixto Sanchez in the rotation. I'll put Drew Anderson. I will put a Jared Eichhoff still. I'll put Vince Velasquez still. And I think guys like Pivetta, a guy like Pivetta, I think he could be a very live arm in the bullpen. We're talking about Velasquez in that role. I think Pivetta could be a very live arm and a future maybe multiple inning reliever. So those are some of the guys I see as a future lineup, but we all know they'll make changes, they'll make trades, they'll make free agent signings. This thing won't look quite all homegrown, but that's what it could look like if it went that way. I appreciate everyone listening. I hope everyone has a great 4th of July week. All-Star break will be here soon. We'll do a big, you know, kind of first half retrospect, looking forward thing for next week's episode. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Scott Kingery for joining us, our producer Mike Angelina for making this sound good, and of course all of you for listening to episode 50. Remember, hashtag Talkin' Phillies and subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a rating there. Helps the show grow right here on Talkin' Phillies.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.